Alexa, set entertainment group to 100%.
Okay.
Well, hey, welcome to everybody. Thanks for your promptness. I appreciate it. I see that I made a mistake by not reminding people not in our time zone about our daylight saving move back to non-daylight saving. So I apologize for that. I saw that there were some call-ins from international numbers that I think reflect that I simply failed to remind everybody about our sort of goofy traditions here in the mainland that we that we do daylight saving, and it's something we have to be aware of. So my apologies for that. Thank you again for your responses and feedback. I think I'm going to be answering a number of your questions, that especially the how-tos and how do you actually facilitate change and transition in talking with someone, because it's the practical application here is what's going to be useful to you to conceptualize and think about it as coaches. I'm going to incorporate some of the questions that you have that relate to this in this seminar, because we're going to look at the at a specific way. And could I get a management of background noise? Your microphone is picking up things you may not be hearing, but anything from background to rustling of paper or moving about, even walking across the room with a headset will be picked up. I want to do an open mic in just a second to get any questions, but to indicate that what we're going to be talking about in this seminar is about how to deconstruct the elements of a story that you're listening to in order to understand how to collaboratively revise or to create a new story. And this is a macro system of beliefs, behaviors, and performance. So basically the equation is beliefs drive behavior, behavior drives performance, and we're going to look at the seven steps that construct a story, that deconstruct a story, or create a new one. And the roadmap is the acronym for those seven steps. Remember one thing, as mentor coaches, that when we're thinking about things and conceptualizing this in this way, that's not what our client is experiencing. Our client does not experience what they're doing as a story. It's just the way things are, as we've touched on before. But whenever you own your story, you get to write it from that point on, or at least you're responsible for writing it in a conscious way, and you get to write the ending. So this is a part of a way that we can think about collaborating with clients. It's just a metaphor, but it's a metaphor that seems to work really well, and I want to share that with you and how I've refined it over time to talk about that and to talk about and illustrate each of those seven steps. So I'm saying that to say this is a way I'm going to incorporate some of your questions into the discussion and answer them. But let me hear from you. Thoughts, questions, reflections, anything you want to add before we officially start? Or before
I do have a – this is Brian. I do have a question.
Yeah.
Why do you use the term mentor coach, where it seems like life coach or maybe transitions coach or career coach seem to be more widely used, but I've noticed that you consistently label yourself and us as mentor coaches?
Well, I'll tell you why I use it for me, and what you do is up to you. I just say that for consistency. The reason I say mentor coach is because it really describes the spectrum of what I do in two ways. Whether I'm working with business or life coaching executives or performing professionals like actors and pro athletes with practicing professionals like docs, financial people, attorneys. It describes best what I do, because I do not simply ask questions and do the professional coach role. And the reason I call myself mentor coach is that I can get away with doing whatever I need to do in order for the success of that client. So here's the backstory on that. I think this probably will briefly answer your question. I was invited to be a guest with a group of coaches who had been together for like 5 years, meeting on a monthly basis. They had all trained at the same place, not CTA, but they had very successful practices, and they invited me, because I knew a few of the people, to do a supervision or just to consult on a case, because they were all kind of stuck or had different opinions and that sort of thing. So I asked the coach to do process notes. You know, he said, she said. And I noticed that one thing that was consistent was the coach was only asking powerful questions. There were great questions, but I said, is this really what you do? You only ask questions. And the answer was, well, that's what we were taught in our training. You only ask powerful questions because that's what professional coaches do. And I said, is that really what you guys do? And there was a pause, a silence. And I didn't save them from it. I let it run. And they finally began talking about, well, yeah, we do other things. I said, what kind of other things? And then as we began to talk, I said, here's a list of things that I hear you beginning to say. And I want you to know that I believe that these are all components of being a professional coach. We ask powerful questions, but that's a way simply to focus the energy field of the brain, to focus on a specific aspect so that we can look at how to proceed with that. But it's not a rule, it's a principle. There are a number of things, and I listed 8 or 9 things that we do as mentor coaches or as professional coaches in addition to simply asking questions. Sometimes we story bust. Sometimes we brainstorm. Sometimes we give advice. Sometimes we provide information. If a client, you know, does one of my colleagues, Dave Meyer, said, if a client doesn't know what an AMWA is, you can't coach it out of them. In other words, there are a number of things that we do in addition to asking powerful questions that sometimes would be seen in the domain of mentoring, but it's not really mentoring because that's telling somebody what to do, and that usually doesn't work very well. But mentor coaching allows giving information if the client doesn't know it. It allows me to look at and identify things that people may not know to ask about, blind spots, biases that are unconscious, information that they have no clue about, simply different ways of conceptualizing and putting things together to understand human dynamics and the dynamics of other people. So we do a whole lot of things with the point of reference always being the client. It's not about us. We're not ghostwriting a story. But with that client, we help them to achieve their goals probably in a way that exceeds their vision, because you can only visualize from your own system. So you've probably had the experience, each of you, that your clients get beyond where they have imagined because their imagination has been as limited as their story. So that allows me, without even thinking about it, to do whatever it takes for someone to be massively successful. And that's my primary and central goal in working with a client. Now, that's an elaborate answer, but does that make sense to you?
It does. Thank you, Dave.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great question, too. I in a way, it kind of matters, but I think what you do is really the most important thing. But you have to identify yourself, and you have to talk a language that people can hear and understand, and especially as you think about marketing and things like that, you want to really resonate with how people are perceiving and hearing, that sort of thing. Other thoughts or questions or comments?
Thank
Final
you.
Call? If not, I'll move into our material. And if there are things that come up or you think about, jot them down, and I'll preserve some time at the end for us to do a discussion. Okay, as I said, we're going to talk about roadmapping a new story. Think about this question. What's the number one addiction we have as humans? The most common addiction that everyone, in a way, has. The biggest addiction? Problems. They give us an effective focus, but they keep us in the same well-worn path in the snow. Most people are stuck because of the story they tell themselves, and that may include problems. So, here's a brief review and overview combined. Much of our behavioral and emotional responses are automatic. Recall we talked about neuroscientists estimate 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. This means that the vast majority of our unconscious responses are based on established algorithms in our brain for behavioral, emotional, and attachment patterns. And these form the shadow story operating system that's on unconscious autopilot, that 90 to 95%. And that's a pretty big amount of what we do to be in charge of. Our lives are filled with these scripted patterns of how we respond to situations. As we repeat certain patterns, our brain wires those as the default mode. The script for each scenario in our lives operates without conscious thought. At a family gathering or a board meeting, we tend to sit in the same seat each time. We look over the menu, but then order the same thing. Now, the roadmap system is the acronym for the 7 steps to understand the algorithms of behavior, emotion, and attachment. It's a strategic way to deconstruct and understand personally constructed stories and how to systematically write new code for mind, brain, and behavior. The approaches to changing behavior that work also consider what this does to personal stories, and what it does especially to someone's identity. So the final step facilitates the development of a corresponding new identity that incorporates this new model, including the transformation. So we're going to look at applying the roadmap, and this is there's an annotated component of your outline about this. The roadmap system applied to career transition in order for us just to have a focus to look at it. But the roadmap can be applied to any story that someone is creating. Wellness, life story, money story, relationship, career, whatever it is, or any smaller story that someone's creating, such as peak performance or simply stress mastery. So, step one, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, and this is more specific to career stories so that we really get into it and illustrate it, and remember we're talking about the broader aspects of the roadmap, but then applied here. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then describe what you want in your career story. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone has only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, they don't have, in my view, the information needed. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do an apples-to-apples comparison, they would need to function at 100% of their capacity in the current career and contrast it with the anticipation of 100% in a new career. It's likely that the same process that resulted in a ceiling, say at 80%, would be repeated in the new situation. So a question here, at what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? And almost always someone will immediately tell you a figure. It still kind of surprises me. It's like they've thought about this, calculated, they'll say 75%. Or 60%, or 90%. They will always come up with a figure. So, a follow-up question is, have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity in this context? In other words, do they know what it's like to be fully successful at their current or past position so they can make an informed decision? Here's a brief sort of related story to illustrate. At the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time, I served as consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research. It was associated with Baylor College of Medicine, where I was faculty, working with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as a result of an accident. Not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternative to a lifetime disability. So instead of trying to convince someone not to kill themselves or doing just an assessment and treatment of maybe depression or post-traumatic or whatever, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life and that suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment in time, the idea of suicide, of being able to control at least one thing in their lives, that they know they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. They needed that hope. I recommended to each that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, and that was emotional as well as physical rehabilitation, recognizing that it was at a different level since the onset of disability. Only by achieving their full potential at their new level could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that decision and be there with them. I worked with a few hundred people over a period of 5 years as a small part of what I did. Thankfully, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation, and they each achieved a new, though different, level of function. Step two, own your story, in this instance, your career story, especially needs and ideals. This is in your resource guide that you can download and print, I hope you have, along with the outline. This is one of this, for some people I work with in mentor coaching, this is the first thing that I ask them to do, is to fill out their needs and their ideals, to pick the top three in each and send it back to me, because this helps both of us understand how to orient to a goal so that the strategies and goal are aligned with their needs and ideals, and that means all of them is going in the same direction. So, a question here, what do you want in your career? And listen for whether the client is getting away from something or going towards something, or rarely both. It may be helpful to distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. And be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, you may need to realign or recommit to a career and get to as close as possible to that 100%. Because keep in mind, choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if someone made the wrong career choice then. One client, for example, spoke of a particular storyline that she had bought into. She was not addicted to work itself, to money, or the things that money bought, but she recognized that she was obsessive, and she used the word addicted, to the pursuit of perfection, to her work ethic. More had become a goal. More money, more work, gradually over time, more hours. The story of the pursuit of money, it was tangible and specific, so that could be a metric, and money is often that, became a substitute for other stories. The ideal of more, of course, lacks an endpoint, so she never felt validated and never felt satisfied. She'd become exhausted with the perpetual series of occasions for hope, though, of being perfect, never quite getting there. I'll return to her situation in a moment, and we'll talk about how more or later are not goals. And you never get there. Perfect is not a goal. You can't get there. Step three, assess your career story. Now, we know that a belief and a fact are both anatomical realities in the brain. It's a physical part of a neuronal network. And someone can't just present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from someone's brain. You can't just list three reasons an idea is wrong, expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural pathways. But change can occur as a process, not an event. A new fact will not overwrite the one that's already there, especially if it's seated in identity. This step is to assess to see if something is limiting, to possibly try out other beliefs. Beliefs are basically unconscious biases that we have. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. So you're going to see the underlying aspects of performance and even behavior if you look at it closely enough. So what's another way to look at this? How might that way of looking at it be limiting you? Have you thought about different perspectives or a different way of looking at it? Are there any questions you're afraid to ask? Or if there's something intuitively telling you, what is it you really want? Or, and, what do you need to let go of to do that? What is present and what is missing, in other words, in a current career? What information do you need? Some questions for this. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want? And here it may be important to distinguish internal dissatisfaction from job dissatisfaction. Internal struggles and unhappiness can be blamed on a job, just like it can be a marriage, because people want to externalize things, to look at an obvious external cause rather than to look inside. Remember that our brains seek closure, whether or not it's an accurate cause and effect. And we also strive to end dissonance, the idea of not knowing or not putting a period at the end of it. So sometimes people create job-related struggles to externalize unhappiness and conflict in an attempt to escape or to pose a recognizable remedy. Then the supposed way to get rid of the problem is to leave it. Same thing happens in a marriage, by the way. Step four, decide on a plan and how to make it work. So you're hearing the roadmap as the acronym here. This is the D, to decide after doing the recognition of owning the story and assessing the components of it to see what works and what doesn't, and then to decide on a plan. Align needs and ideals, and that's one of the that's something I have a physical folder for each client, and usually what's in it, and probably the only thing that's in it, is the client information packet that I have printed that they've sent me before our first session. You guys are welcome to plagiarize mine as much as you'd like. You'll see it on my website, Mentor Path, under the coaching tab. The other thing I put in that chart is on the inside first page of the folder, I put their three top needs and top three ideals, because I want to be sure that as we're looking at and creating the movement toward their goals, incorporating the strategies, co-creating that new story, it's really aligned with their needs and their ideals. And clarifying that themselves often is immensely useful for them. In addition to, in many ways, in addition to a career. So, aligning needs and ideals with purpose and passion. Focus on a goal. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged in whatever you do. It may be different than what you've done for three or more decades. It means you're going to examine again fundamental strengths, including needs and ideals. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized. Create your own schedule and structure. So many of the people who I've been privileged to train at CTA over the years are making a transition for the first time to own their own business, to set and collect professional fees for the first time. So this is a transition I've seen so many times. No corporate structure or job to fit into and govern your day. So that means you have to cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths and weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others, and especially where you can make the greatest contribution. There's a couple of papers especially, that address this on my website that you can read or download. I think the first one is toward brain hardware optimization, and it incorporates some personality and work and performance styles and things to consider to help you be more empathically attuned to the particular style and way of going about things for your clients. So a question here. How would our work together get you where you want to be? So I want to return to the client pursuing perfection. Her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it or feeling fulfilled. She only looked for the next task to do perfectly. When I had seen this enough to highlight it, I did with her and got her to look at it with me in a collaborative way. It seemed that as soon as she began enjoying her work, really immersed in it, then she would do something to stop that. She might begin procrastinating or dollop on a whole new group of things to do. She would put off, for example, completing work, which restored her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. This was the default mode. This was familiar territory. When I pointed out the pattern, she recognized it, and it prompted her insight. She said, well, I realize work has always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working. So a way, of course, to look at guilt in coaching is to get rid of guilt, you either have to change your belief or your action. And as Carl Menninger said, save guilt for real sin. There was nothing that she was doing to transgress her own morals or ideals here, but she was feeling guilty. So we looked at that carefully and looked at how to reconfigure, aligning what she wanted and needed and how she went about that. So one way of doing that, and there's some information in the resource guide also about a scientific way of creating a vision and a way of constructing affirmations that are the story that support the vision. The vision is about rewiring the brain. The affirmations are about revising the software. And I'm not going to get into the detail of that because there's details and examples in the that you can review in the resource guide that accompanies. Step five, map a new story. Where, when, how to begin. SMART goals, initiatives, next best action. And navigate with the brain's error detection mechanism. The human brain creates patterns of connection in our ongoing search for meaning. These patterns, these mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. Whenever we depart from what we know, even when it's not getting us to where we want to be, when we story bust and create a different way of proceeding than the default story, it creates discomfort and uncertainty. But that's also what begins any significant journey. Our brains also get in the act here. They have an error detection mechanism. There's a specific brain location of this, very close to the emotional center, that says when something is not what the brain predicts, in other words, that default mode, the brain reads this as, this isn't normal when we try something new. When our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic. Then we notice when something doesn't fit that predicted pattern, or our brains do, especially the error detection mechanism. The error detection mechanism in the brain functions to compare input, the new stuff, or the now stuff, with what's expected. And a mismatch creates a disruption in the expected order of things. Now, here's how that's going to show, and here's how that's going to happen with every client you work with. As soon as there's a beginning of change, they're going to feel uncomfortable. So you want to help them do two things. Read this correctly, that this is not their gut or their intuition telling them that this is not the right way to go. I better go back to what I know. Also, to incorporate this as part of a new model of how they're both changing and transforming, and in order to make it permanent, that model needs to incorporate the new experience. But they can also use that to self-validate, because when it's reframed, you're providing a model of how this discomfort can be a signpost of moving ahead as validation that they're in new territory, not a trigger of dangers ahead, better head back, which makes sense to stop. So if advice or anything is unfamiliar or unwanted, it sets off this error detection response, which is also why we don't usually tell our clients what to do or give advice or tell them what they should be doing or what we did in a situation like that. And that just simply means that somebody can reject an idea before they consider it, and it's another barrier to resisting change. Focus on problems energizes because it activates the error detection mechanism. This is why problems can be so addictive, because it creates activation, but it also means that you're revisiting what you already know, so that creates closure, so that just makes the pathways even more etched. Bad news gets our attention for the same reason, that it's something different, so it activates. So this is something that we want to consider. The mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context or time in our lives, such as stress in childhood, may not apply in current situations. The hardwiring, though, is not permanent. It can be revised. When changes occur in a systematic and consistent way, such as with collaborative contingent conversations, which is what we specialize in, new connections are made in the brain. New maps are created. The brain's error detection mechanism can be used as part of a powerful internal navigation system. So, choice architecture is an art and a science. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy directions, not by actively nudging them, but by collaborative exploration. We're susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, and short-sighted, which is why we may need to highlight biases or blind spots or assumptions that people have, things that they may be totally unaware of, that we will need to develop that working alliance so that we can get away with saying whatever we need to say to work with a client so that they can rewrite their stories or create entirely new ones in some ways. When we consider how people think, we can design environments of choice that make it easier for people to pick better options. This is not manipulative. This is a collaboration of looking together at new possibilities, creating a new story. A new connection, exploring possibility, creates new pathways, opening, beginning in the brain. So it's that kind of activation. When you pursue problems, you go down old, already existing problems, and it etches it even further, as we've discussed before. Step 6, author changes. Implement the plan to reach your goal. Someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers means changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would apply to a new career, you just change the setting. And this is from my own work. Even if you go from head of HR at one multinational oil company in another to another in the same city, the culture is worlds apart. The correct paradigm would be not only about the process, but the content of the new career and the process of change and the entire context of the corporate culture. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. Now, a simple example, in making a transition from medical practice to coaching, I assume getting clients would be similar to getting therapy in analytic patients. For me, that was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book. My assistant would take the calls, put patients on the schedule and waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching, as you might have guessed already. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. Marketing is a world of difference. My mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into considering marketing. So a question here, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And step 7, program new experiences and incorporate them into your identity. This is what makes change permanent. When the behaviors and the transformation are internalized into the model of how and who someone is. Both the change and the transition involve changing a core identity. Your identity, as you know, is the story you tell yourself about yourself, what you're willing to consider, what you'll do, what you won't do. Identity is a set of beliefs that relate to who you are as a person, what you can do, as well as what you will and won't do. When changes don't last, someone has not changed their identity most often. When there's a shift in identity to incorporate these changes, that helps to make it permanent. The strongest force, as you've heard me say before, in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our own identification of ourselves, our identity, not what I do, but who I am. That's why it's so important. In coaching, we stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. So this is addressed in a parallel way with our clients. So here are just some principles related to career that I've come to see and wanted to conclude this portion with. Time is not, and these are in your outline too, so I'll just go through these and let you think about them later. Time is not an adequate measure of hard work. Hard work is not an adequate measure of performance or success. A work ethic is different, can be really different from a productivity or success ethic. If possible, delegate everything other than what you do uniquely well. Now, you have to work to get to that. Time management is energy management. Stress regulation is energy management. Follow your passion. I didn't say this; these made a story. I said I'm listing some stuff. Know your optimum state of mind, your zone, to accomplish a specific task. Know how to enter your optimum state of mind, how to get into that zone. When your passion and your expertise combine, deciding possibilities occur. Structure gives you freedom. And related to this focus and illustration, when you're thinking, or if you're thinking of retiring, consider retirement as a new career. What is its mission and purpose? What's the business plan? The difference your wisdom will make in this career, your new opportunity, your new contribution, a different career perhaps. Finally, consider this possibility. When you reach a point in your life that you can celebrate the freedom to work rather than freedom from work, that's success. So let's look a little bit more at operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded, especially from parents in the early years of life, become automatic. We've talked about this again. So let's look at an example. That we may create two stories simultaneously that go in the opposite direction. The surface story, which is only that 5 to 10%, I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story may ghostwrite behavior, and someone may or may not be consciously aware of the components of it. Well, I don't believe I can make big money. I've used this example before, so I'm returning it to it for consistency. Or you know, I don't think I have what it takes. Or what if I try my hardest and really don't make it? I'd be terrifically embarrassed. Another example, the surface story. I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority. The shadow story, well, I can't have total authority in my relationship because my partner acts like I'm taking it away if I do. So, considerations of career need to be considered in conjunction with developmental phases of the individual in their life as well as in their career, because in each developmental phase of life, there are certain aspects that we need to get familiar with as coaches. In developmental phases of a career, there are also, often parallel but sometimes not, developmental phases, just like the developmental phases I've talked of in working with a client or with a group or with a couple. The first is development of a working alliance so that you develop a true collaborative framework so that there is trust and openness and self-reflective exploration of everything that needs to be. So here are some things that I think can be helpful. I'm not covering everything in the outline because I don't think I need to, because I want to save just a bit of time for questions. But some of the effective essentials in engineering change, and this is redundant for you, I know, focus specifically on the next step. Here's a story that simply illustrates that. Some of you have heard me say this. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He averaged, though, 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was interviewed immediately afterward and asked, how did he keep going when he was exhausted and he still had 1,000 miles ahead? His response, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. Now, that's focus, but that's also a map. He knew where the telephone poles ended. Two, specify the next step, not abstract or global. Some is not a number. Soon's not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. Lose weight's a good idea. Save money for the future's a good idea, but it's not a plan. Three, make changes tangible and concrete. Construct a yardstick or a map to determine where you are and where you're going so that you can measure progress along the way and tell what deter and distraction is. Four, make progress measurable. Demystify the journey, a specific destination, and a tangible focus on the next step. And five, make progress visible. Small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible with celebrations of each small victory. Remember that the reason that we decide to do what we do is because of how we imagine we're going to feel when we do it. One of the best examples of shrinking a task to a tangible next step is Alcoholics Anonymous, challenging its members to one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a manageable, foreseeable, specific action. A small target leads to small victories. The cumulative experience is effectiveness and mastery. So here are, just in a brief overview, a dozen AAA principles to author a transition story. Principles of change, actually, to author a transition story. The AAA principles: awareness, acceptance, and action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each of the storylines with a question, is it working, and make it a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. A not-so-secret to success is you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, experience. Here's another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price. I'm doing it right now. I love this, and I believe it will make a difference in your lives and for your clients. So it's not even like paying. It's doing what my passion is. At the end of each day, as you probably already experienced, you probably feel more energized than you did at the beginning of the day, even if you begin with a full slate of energy, because of the co-created benefits that you're bringing to people. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story, positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not sure what they want. Here's a neuroscience and law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? First two questions of travel agent. Remember, in the olden years, olden days, there were travel agents. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Now, we know from very recent neuroscience that the brain works like a Google map. You indicate something, the brain perceives something and boots up a map to deal with it. So a goal is sort of like MapQuest. You program where you want to go, make a map, and determine the time. And a caveat here is to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. Think about that dessert you did not eat right before. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's kind of like saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. When you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? And a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10% of the Harvard Business School graduates had a vision and specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, that 10 to 15% had 90% of the assets of the entire group. A similar study was done over 4 decades of Dartmouth graduates. Only 3%, and this it's interesting the way it works out, only 3% had very specific goals and a plan. That 3% ended up with 97% of the assets. So there's some kind of relationship there somewhere. Now, it's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals. Now, 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when, the travel agent questions. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by December 31st, and you've got to add the year, 2019. Because your unconscious is always looking for it now. Here's a good idea. I want to save money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer of $350 from my checking account to my retirement fund the first day of each month. It's a good decision that you only have to make once. Then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, maybe a quantum leap. Getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every August riding on the coast of Maine. Now, you'll have to substitute your own goals there. Then, reread your goals regular and breakthrough twice a day when you wake up and when you go to bed. You're creating a future memory like a vision to live into. Five, You're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. We know that in coaching. Focus on the next step. Have a plan. Create a system. We're talking, we talked about a micro system of looking at the neural conditioning chart. We looked at a macro system of the roadmap. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. These are for simple behavior-related kinds of patterns. So write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefits of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is all so simple. Good parents have known it for centuries, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback. To your partner, ask, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. To your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babimba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of something going wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest and full feedback has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself or herself and to remember who he is and why he's important to the life of the village. This may have been an original 360-degree feedback. Even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves. We can get centered and reconnect with our essence. Now, here's a sidebar. You've noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide, compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experience, is the 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, or my favorite, narcissism meets chance. So there's a review of research on goal setting in the work pages of the outline that help us understand 2 essential components: why people give up on goals and how effective goal setting can create and ensure long-term achievement. Success insurance. This is based on some studies that one of the original executive coaches, Marshall Goldsmith, did. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. So what do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already 1 chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. But he went to 12,500 homes and talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 questions. Which location would you recommend I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours from 7 to 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the evening? And which newspaper would you recommend I advertise in? And then he added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500. In his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, You're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, "This is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment?" He said, "Yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap." So when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to. Cliff began shuffling along in his boots. You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6, but nobody told Cliff this. And when the other runner was sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. We each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing and living that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And number 12, and this is the final, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges, and in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity, which can be described eventually by using a different organizing principle and perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together in a new story. Okay, I'll go over, if any of you want to hang with me, a few minutes, because I took a little bit longer, as I sometimes do with the stories, than I had intended. I'm operating from the same outline you are, so the pacing is a little, I get excited about. So, questions, comments, clarifications about anything we talked about, and I'll be happy to go over a few minutes, 5 minutes, if you like, if there are questions that would be helpful.
This is Angela.
Yeah, go ahead, Angela, and somebody I didn't hear a second. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if these steps for the roadmap, is there anything that's different or anything that you need to consider when a change has been thrust upon your a person, something that was not of their choosing? And so even getting to the point of them even wanting to write a new story is a challenge. What kind of advice would you give there, and how you apply what you just presented to us?
Yes, and that's a good question, and I saw that in the initial questions that were sent to me. I think that is a particular consideration. The first aspect of working with somebody, wherever the change comes from, internal, external, some combination, surprise, or plan, the first step in working with someone in an individual coaching experience is to resonate with their experience. Remember, we talked about state always comes first, then strategy and story. You have to resonate with someone's experience empathically to create a common ground so that you can go someplace new together. We talked about that early on. So it would be to really understand their experience of that change and the things that happened, so that you understand how perhaps upset or surprised or whatever they were, not that you're going to stay there, but you need to join that person and create a common ground in order to move ahead. And this relates to one of the other questions about what about somebody who continues to go back to problems. You know, problems have an already paved pathway in the brain, and it may be reassuring. It alleviates immediate tension to go back to a problem and reiterate it, but it etches it further, and it ultimately doesn't help. So with change and with what someone is addressing to look at possibilities. After you understand and resonate empathically, you know, I get how surprising and upsetting that was for you. And then to see what kind of response. Let's look at the possibilities now. You know, this relates, and I've never shared it with a client, but you've seen it. I think I put it as one of my quotes in one of the books. I can't really tell you. This is from what I heard was said by a very wise guy at an AA meeting. I have relinquished all hope for a better past. I mean, you can't say more succinctly than that. But that's not where the client is. And this is not, you know, their story. This is like where they are and where they are in that stage of grief and mourning for what was. And the what was, it may be a relationship, it may be a career, it may be a job, it may be a whole set of assumptions, but there's going to be a process of change and transformation for coming to an acceptance to begin to put energy on what they really can do something about. Because this is something that's in the backdrop of what we consider with many clients is to distinguish what you can determine and what you can't determine, because clients may rile against what they can't. If this would just change, if my boss would, or if my partner would just, if you recognize what you can't change, and that usually ends at the level of your skin, and everything outside that, from the other person to world events, if you put your energy instead into what you can determine, what you think and feel and experience, and how you behave, then you can be much more effective. Because if you assume that someone else should respond as if they were an extension of your interest or your desire, that's an absolute formula for frustration. So it may be helpful to help someone redirect into what they can be effective in doing, and then to begin to think about where they are and how you can help them write their own story or revise a story that isn't working, has a limited glass ceiling, or in some other way is frustrating. Now, is that a beginning of an answer to your question? It's a great question, by the way.
Yes, I think it is. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, super. Thanks for that. There was another comment or question at the same time. I wanted to be sure we got to that.
This is Michael.
Yeah, hey.
Hi. Within the architecture of transition, where you say there's an ending, a neutral ground, and a new beginning, do clients have different stories for each stage of the transition, and do you need to go through a roadmap for, you know, their story about their old job, for example, and the ending, then a new story for the neutral zone, and so on?
Yes, is the simple answer.
Okay.
And each person will have their own style, their own way of processing, and it's not going to be orderly. I mean, this is not something you know, we talk about this as if it were a real map. These are our brain algorithms that can be discussed as a way to sort of recognize a process, but sometimes a process is only recognizable in retrospect. So this is simply a way for each of you to think about listening and listening in a more informed way. Because remember when we talked about change and transition, those steps are not going to occur in sequence, or they're not going to occur alphabetically. It's going to be something that just informs you, and the whole concept of story and these components are understanding the basic aspects to deconstruct a story in order to know how to collaborate with someone to address something at the moment, but it has to be where they are in the moment, in the foreground of their experience, and be have that kind of significance and salience to be right now, because that's where they are, and we go with where someone is to create something new together. We can't go where they should be or where they ought to be, but where they are, and then collaborate to go to a new place. Makes sense, Michael? Good question.
Yeah.
Was there another question?
Yeah, just a quick question. Dave, this is Carolyn. I actually am working with someone who recently lost about 6 months ago, not quite, her spouse. And it's really been such a roadmap.
She lost what?
Her spouse.
Okay.
Her husband. Uh-huh. And initially lots of action, lots of activity. And what I find in terms of what she wants from me as a coach, really, is just to listen and sit with her in the moment of whatever it is that she's going through. So, and what I try to do in that is point to the progress that she is making, and to not really sort of diminish the steps that kind of have to take place in order for her to sort of create or step into the new identity, which she is actively working on.
I think that's a really good description of what we do with every client, because they are where they are, and we are a catalyst for that process. And there are various things that we do to catalyze that process, but we're not ghostwriting it. And we're helping them look at what's next, and then what's after what's next, so that we're a guide and a catalyst, but not a ghostwriter. So you can tell and know how to facilitate the process of what she's doing and empathically resonate with it in that collaboration. So you're doing more than listening. You're guiding a process, and sometimes that is to show the admirable restraint of not saying a damn thing while they're doing the necessary work. Sometimes that's actively engaging in some way, or looking at something they may be omitting or may have a limited perspective on. So that's why that goes back to the, you know, to the mentor coach deal. Whatever it's going to take to help someone, in your best judgment, facilitate the evolution and transformation of their story and their experience. So I think that's a great summary of it. Thank you all very much. If there are things we didn't cover, jot them down or fire them off to me in an email. We'll have a discussion time at the beginning and end of next seminar. And our final seminar is going to be about the specific challenges and opportunities in transitions. And there are some aspects that are not usually talked about in professional coaching that I want to cover and be sure that we've talked about. So thanks again for all of your energy, input, comments, questions, and feedback.
Dave, will you have this recorded? Will this session be recorded?
Say it again, please.
Will the session be recorded?
Yeah, all four are recorded. The access to the online playback is at the link that you got when you signed up for the course, or the link that I sent as a reminder. Both of those are the same link. So, yes. So thanks very much. I look forward to picking up right here next time. Have a great rest of the week. Bye now.
Thank you. Thank you.